This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at TheHollywoodOutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 165. This week we're going to discuss upcoming releases, including Beyond the Lights, Dumb and Dumber 2, and Rosewater. We have spoiler-free reviews of Big Hero 6 and Nightcrawler. Our From the Outside In topic this week, sequels. How long is too long for a sequel? We'll explain a little bit more later. Latest movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and everything I've learned in life, I learned from IMDb. That's actually a true story. Joining me today are my fellow hoes. First up, he's a gamer who occasionally watches TV and pretends to care about children. Scotty Clark.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good.
We are off to the races. I barely had time to get my seat warm, and we're already like...
I know. I think that might be the fastest we've ever got going.
Yeah, I think so. I think somebody wants to play some Call of Duty.
I do. I really do. Next up, he's taking a break from filming his upcoming Lifetime movie. Our very own Grumpy Cat, author Justin McCumber. How are you?
What's up?
You're supposed to say Ermagod.
Ermagod, it's Christmas.
Did you see the sequel? The trailer for that?
No.
You haven't seen the Grumpy Cat trailer?
No.
There's a real trailer. Out? Yeah, it's a real movie. Voiced by Aubrey Plaza, who doesn't do a very good job at all.
Shocker.
She doesn't. I was expecting a movie where you just saw a cat carrying around a frame and then instant memes would pop up over his face. But
like
no.
Carry like a light bright around with it and suddenly bing.
Yep. Pretty much.
Light bright. That's a blast from the past.
I haven't seen one of those in ages.
Well, yeah, the choking hazard waiting to happen.
Those things are fantastic.
It was a real toy.
So are Legos. We could play with anything.
I know.
Being a kid
is wonderful. And we survive somehow.
Brian Williams, as you may have noticed, will not be joining us. He had a personal emergency. So that's all we're going to say. If he wants to enlighten you next week, then come back. He's still alive. We're pretty sure he's okay. But it's Brian, so you don't want to assume anything. He's probably in jail. What's
just
new?
Assume he's in jail.
Just assume he's
go
in jail.
Go with that.
All I know is the Republicans took over. Brian can't make it. I'm thinking he partied a little too hard.
I'm thinking he was flipping trucks.
Something.
Flipping trucks.
Chaos.
Is that moving on from tipping cows?
No, it's more like, you know, what you see like in towns after their team wins.
Riots.
Riots.
Big game,
okay.
Like a riot.
But I like
on fire, cars are flipping.
I kind of like the tipping cow reference myself.
I do. I kind of like that, too. That's what he was out there doing. He was flipping cows. It's a little more advanced. You know, anybody could just tip one over.
Yeah. Now they're just flipping them. He does like a 180 with a cow. Uh-huh. That's pretty impressive. This week, we did get a notice that the final episode of The Colbert Report is going to air December 18th. I'm really not a big fan of this, but I know, Justin, you kind of are. Scott, I don't know if you are.
I like The Daily Show. I don't watch The Colbert Report only because he's playing a character, and I'm not that interested in watching a character's feelings regarding whatever news they're doing. I like Jon Stewart because it's Jon Stewart. I like John Oliver's Last Week Tonight because it's John Oliver doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't really care for the whole character shtick aspect of it. I never have, but I do think he's a very talented comedic actor, so I look forward to him taking over for David Letterman, and I might check. I'm much more likely to watch that than I am The Colbert Report.
I'm a fan of the show, but not enough to watch it every day or every week. It's nothing that I make a point of watching.
Is it one you would make a point to tune in for the finale?
Probably for the finale, just to see what happens, but that's about it. I mean, I'll make a point to watch the John Oliver one, but I don't make a point to watch Jon Stewart either. I don't know. It's on at weird times, and again, I just got cable back, so maybe
DVR?
I should start
DVR. Oh, that's right.
Now,
you just got cable back.
He's still learning, Justin. He doesn't remember.
Remember, DVR is your friend.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time keeping up with all the new shows in the fall as it is.
Oh, another... fucking tell me about it.
Scott doesn't have that muscle memory. He doesn't have it. Oh, speaking of news, did you hear Lemony Snicket's is going to Netflix now?
Yeah.
I heard that. That's cool.
That's really cool. That's a cool series of books. It was an okay movie. I didn't think
it was
bad.
I like the movie.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad.
I liked it quite a bit.
I like the bits with the baby. The baby, they made it look like she was talking with the subtitles.
Oh, yeah, that was cute.
That was really clever.
It could be a good series.
Was that the preamble to the E-Trade stuff?
Probably.
and then she grew up to be in Sucker Punch.
Is that the same baby?
Yeah. No, not the baby, the
oh,
older.
Oh, man. I was like, how far were their movies apart?
No, the other the other girl.
Richard Linklater kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't recall that. Wow, that was quick. Well, that'll be interesting because that is a good series of books, and I think people should check those out if you haven't already.
I was bummed that they never made the second. They went on with it. They just kind of stopped.
It didn't make enough money.
Yeah.
Let's get into movie and TV news. I know everybody is waited with bated breath. Jake Gyllenhaal continues to take interesting roles, as we just found out in Nightcrawler, and we'll be talking about that a little more later. But now he's going to star as a cocaine smuggler named Max Mermelstein. It's a biopic, and it's called The Man Who Made It Snow. Yeah, I said biopic, and I'm going to keep saying biopic. I'm taking it back.
You're trying to make it sexy?
I am, a little bit.
Yeah, well, this film is apparently the first project. Anton Fuqua, his production company, Fuqua Films, which, come on, dude, you give it a little more thought.
I thought that was fantastic.
Fuqua Films.
That's really close.
It's a first look deal that he's got with IM Global. And so this is a biopic about Max Mermelstein, who is actually a real person, who in the 1980s was a cocaine smuggler. At the time, he was the only American who was admitted to the inner circle of the Colombian Cocaina Cartel.
That is an extreme stereotype accent, and I like it.
Was that Pacino? Was it supposed to be?
I don't know. That was Scarface, I think.
My little friend!
That's what I thought.
So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be playing what sounds like a Jewish drug smuggler. I can't wait to see it.
Once again, even the cartels can't get a movie without white people in it.
That's right.
And I'll be honest with you, and we'll talk about the movie later, but Justin, you can attest to this. Gyllenhaal was fantastic in Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the point where anything he does, I will check out. And Fuqua, he's a good director. He did The Equalizer. He did Tears of the Sun. He's actually done quite a few movies. He's a good action director.
Training Day.
Yeah, Training Day. Olympus.
The Replacement Killer.
Olympus Has Fallen. He did that too. Does that count?
Why not?
I like it. But I like some Olympus people get fallen. Mad at me when I say it. So.
White House Down was better.
What? You take
Channing
that
Tatum,
back.
Bro. Channing no. Tatum makes it. He's like Bacon.
No. Kevin Bacon. And as though he's in everything. Better. Yeah. Okay, well, here's what Justin is dying, I think, to talk about. Because as soon as Brian couldn't make it, he's like, I'll take it. I'll talk about it. Christopher Nolan, and I think it's funny because he gave this interview, and I think it was Rolling Stone? Whoever it was for.
No, it
was The Guardian. Yeah, The Guardian. Very long interview, very extensive interview, actually a really astute interview. It was very deep. And all anybody picked up was one sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because it is a phrase that only seems to come from very hoity-toity, head-up-their-own-ass kind of people. Christopher Nolan doesn't normally come across as that type. But when he uses the phrase, a real movie wouldn't do that, that instantly gets the hackles up for a lot of people.
Well, explain what he was talking about.
Well, in the interview, The Guardian asked him about they called it, quote-unquote, comedy ending codas, which are those little pieces at the end of a movie, the stingers.
A movie stinger.
That we quite often talk about. And he said that he felt like a real movie would not do that, wouldn't have one of those in it at the end of it.
I want to be clear, because some people, you know, they're not hip to the lingo, so to speak. The movie stinger is at the very tail end after the credits and everything else. It's like a piece of movie that wasn't part of the earlier movie.
Right.
To some people.
Geek movies have been doing it for a while. I think it's more prevalent amongst the superhero films. I mean, hell, even Daredevil did it back in the day. If you stuck through the credits and watched you know, you would actually see Bullseye in the hospital wrapped up like the mummy and killing a fly that's buzzing around with like a paperclip or something. So it's been done for a long time, but he said that no real movie would do that. And yeah, who the fuck is to say what a real movie does or doesn't do? Christopher Nolan, you're a great filmmaker. I love all the things you do. But you are not the definer of what a real, quote-unquote, movie is. A real movie is whatever the filmmaker wants it to be. I would have the same feeling if someone said a real writer wouldn't or a real painter wouldn't. You can't say what constitutes real art. All you can do is talk to your own art. And I think that's what got people's attention is this kind of attitude of I know better than
I get people. That, but I do want to point out, and I think it's fair that context is important.
That's what I was going with.
You don't have context in an interview, and it didn't I didn't take it as flippant, but I also remember back when Man of Steel came out, they asked him about stingers and whatnot in Man of Steel. And I saw him in a couple of interviews talking about it. Because if you guys don't remember, he executive produced the Man of Steel film. And he talked about, and he made that joke that he wouldn't do that in his movie. And so I don't know if he was making an arrogant comment or was it a flippant comment because he's in the DC world and Marvel's made it really big doing this option. Or did he mean that some filmmakers, serious filmmakers, and I don't consider it arrogant when I hear it. I think the way he said it might have came across arrogant. I don't think it was meant arrogant. Some filmmakers see when you take a film, they want everything to be from the start to the finish, and everything should be in there. There shouldn't be a little piece that you have to sit through five more minutes of credits to see in some filmmakers' eyes. I don't agree with the comment that a real movie, if you meant it seriously, I want to say, if you meant it seriously, I don't agree with that comment, but I don't take it as pompous and arrogant as some people are. I just take that as he's a guy, he's very serious about his craft. He sees movies a certain kind of way. And in his mind, if that's the way he looks at it, it's a betrayal to the audience. And I understand that. I don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Why is it a betrayal?
Because the entire movie isn't on screen. And you have to wait for a piece of the movie that you think isn't. Most people think the movie's over, but there's more later.
Yeah, but the stingers don't usually have. They're vaguely related to the proper
sometimes,
movie.
Sometimes they're sometimes actually adding to the movie. It really depends.
I mean, I can think of like maybe. I mean, obviously, you guys have seen a lot more movies than I have, but I can think of maybe two or three where it actually added to the story after the credits or something like that. Like, I think it did it in, what was the zombie movie? Not Night of the Living
Day of the Dead. Or Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead. They did that in the credits and that. I mean, even the one in Avengers was just more of an inside joke. It wasn't like adding any plot points or anything like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Most of them are, at least in the Marvel universe, are kind of giving you some insight as to what's coming on the horizon. Like, I remember when they'd show, like, Thor's hammer. Well, we know that a Thor movie's coming or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't see how that's, like, a disservice.
Well, there have been, and I don't have them, like, literally right in front of me, but there are films where you think a hero or a villain is dead, and they'll, you know, like, Freddy, Jason Goes to Hell, or, you know, and their hand comes up at the very end. Mm-hmm. Things like that. There are films where it changes the way that the movie was seen
sure.
or how it ended. So I think in some filmmakers' minds, I'm not speaking for Chris Nolan. I don't know Chris Nolan. Well, I mean, he's not taking my calls. I've called, like, repeatedly.
Did you text?
No. I try to be personal.
Okay.
And I think to some filmmakers, it feels like it's not fair to the audience. Now, Justin, do you see some truth to that? Like, you could – I'm not saying you agree with him, but you could see how some of them would see it like that?
I can understand why some directors might see it that way, but I do think that's a very limited scope kind of take at this sort of thing. When it comes to Marvel's films, we expect these stingers to be there. They established it from movie one, and they've carried it forward. So I think if they didn't have a stinger, we'd, you know, kind of be left wondering, well, what the fuck? Why'd they take that away from us? You know, not every film, of course, needs a stinger. I do think it's something that works better for, you know, either science fiction films or superhero movies, fantasy, anything speculative fiction wise, I think it's just fine. But I don't quite know how you couldn't take the him saying a real movie wouldn't do that as anything but a slightly arrogant. Because I mean, he's dictating what a movie is, and that's not his place.
If I heard it, I would know exactly how to take it. I'm big on if I see something in print, I have a hard time knowing exactly how to take it because I believe in context, and I think context is very important.
But there is the words, a real movie. I'm not quite sure what context that could be said but in which it's not kind of
arrogant. He's very dry, though. I've seen him numerous times, and when he makes a joke, it's extremely dry and very almost flippant. So
what if he said it with, like, air quotes while he did it? You know what I'm saying?
Or
like,
if he did it with a slight smile, a real movie wouldn't do that. You know, I mean, context to me would determine if it's a joke or not, and I didn't hear it. So,
well, and to Justin, to your point, you said it's not his place to say what a real movie is or isn't. Whose place is that? And I'm asking
nobody's.
Nobody's. I agree
nobody's
with that.
Nobody's place.
Okay.
It's no different than a critic saying, that's not really, you know, that's absolutely not a good movie. nobody should like that movie. And then somebody says, I like that movie. Well, you don't understand movies. Well, it's the equivalent of you just don't get it.
I mean, I see both sides of this because that phrase, real movie, just almost kind of grates on you a little bit. Mm-hmm. It just sounds pretentious and sounds
I get it.
Like I'm above something else. But I think it was just a poor choice of words. You know, you're in an interview. You're at some point in an interview, it starts to get just a little more relaxed instead of professional. And I wasn't there. None of us were
there.
That's
when the truth came out. And then he's like, I hate movies.
Exactly. No. But
only my movies are real. I, just kidding. It's not what he said.
I think what would have been better is something like along the lines of not real movie, but
serious something that, movie.
Maybe serious. I mean, but
What it should have been is he should have. What Justin's saying is it was extremely general the way it came out or reads, and what he should have said is I wouldn't make my movies that way. I prefer to have all my movies from credit to credit, and that's where the movie ends, mm-hmm. as opposed to there's another piece at the end. I don't think anybody would have taken that poorly, but unfortunately, he didn't say that.
Right.
Do you agree, Justin?
He did not say that.
Yeah. Let's go to happier news, musical news. Let's sing. Phantom of the Opera.
Please don't.
A series is coming, or it's in the works, I should say, at ABC. Is this something you think could work?
I honestly don't know. This as a story, sure. If they just took the story of Phantom of the Opera, which stripped it out. Well, it's a deep story, but it's basically that's
a disfigured man living under the sewers.
He's a mass murderer. He's trying to either murder this woman that he loves, that is a performer at this opera house. But what it's known for is the music. And if you took that story out and made a series out of just the story, that'd be awesome. Number one, you'd have to stretch that out to even get one season, much less multiple seasons if they wanted to try to make it happen more often. But the charm for me of Phantom of the Opera is the music. It was really good music. I racked my brain and I could not think of a television series that was all musical.
Cop Rock. Remember that one, Justin? Remember Cop Rock?
No, but I did see a trailer for a new TV show called Gallant that I don't know which network it's going to be on, but it's a fantasy musical.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I've seen TV shows that did like a musical episode. Like I think Buffy did that once, didn't they?
Yeah. Once more with feeling. Hell yeah.
You just opened that door, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I could start singing right now. You want me to?
No.
Well, and I read the article here talking about the story, and they didn't mention anything about music. They talked about the story. They talk about who's going to be writing it and this kind of thing, but no mention at all. Oh, the guy that's supposed to be involved is talking about it, and nothing is mentioned about music. So I kind of hope that they go that route just because I've never seen it. I've never seen it done. I don't think it'll work, but I just want to see somebody do something different.
I think
there is Glee. We did kind of leave out Glee. There's a lot of singing. Yeah.
That's kind of a novelty, though, isn't it? I mean, the novelty's worn off. I don't really know anybody that still watches it. Is it still on?
No.
The point, though, was Scott asked, has this ever been done before?
That's true.
And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only real example that I know of that has been done.
I forgot about Glee. Glee, to me, was so comedic, though. It wasn't like a serious, it didn't have a serious tone, really.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They did establish songs. To do Phantom of the Opera, I mean, granted, there's already not enough songs for whole series.
Yeah.
You need 13 or 22, depending on how many episodes.
Oh, you just have one song every episode? I mean, then it's not a musical.
That's how they end it. It's the same song, actually, every week, and they just do it in a different style.
This is the
one
remix.
One week's jazz, one week's rap.
a rap version of Phantom of the
Opera.
One
week's Rastafarian. They just do all kinds of crazy things. That's what I think. It's interesting, though. I like when they're trying to adapt different things. I mean, because they're already just, you know, wringing every property they can dry. I like a different take on an established property, I guess. That'd be interesting. Well, last week we talked about Chadwick Boseman being cast as a Black Panther. Apparently, before he does that, he wants to be Steven Seagal. Because he's going to be starring in this revenge thriller called Message from the King. Which does sound like an 80s Steven Seagal flick. Is this a good career move, Justin?
Well, I have not seen 42, which he starred in, nor have I seen the biopic that he
did. Oh!
Shut up, move on. That he did.
I'm bringing it back!
Even though I have not seen either of those movies, neither of them really speak to a action hero, which is what being a part of the Marvel films is going to require of him. So I do think that by taking this film, which is a revenge thriller, is going to help build his, you know, street credibility, so to speak, as an action actor. Because in this film, he's going to be playing a character named Jacob King, who goes to South Africa in search of his younger sister, and all he's got is a few, all he has
you're a writer,
is $100 and a plane ticket, and 1 week's time to find her. And then, of course, the next, you know, the day after he gets there, he learns that she's been killed. And so then the film kind of follows what happens those next 6 days. It kind of feels like Taken South Africa style. But it is a film that I think will build some credibility with him as an action guy. I do think it's kind of a move in the right direction as far as his career goes. And I'm, you know, kind of curious to see it, especially considering that I've not seen him in the two previous biopics that he was in. This would be cool. But he does also have another movie coming up where he's going to be playing the Egyptian god Thoth in an upcoming 2016 film called Gods of Egypt. So he looks like, you know, he's going to be spreading his wings across the action and adventure films that are going on right now. And hopefully he'll have a big career coming from it.
Yeah, I'm not a big Seagal flick fan. Never was.
It sounds like every plot to every Steven Seagal movie ever made.
I think I saw Under Siege, and I remember a girl coming out of a
cake. You guys think you're above the law, but you ain't above mine.
Now you sounded like Stallone more than...
They all sound the same. Come on. It's like the same.
But I am a fan of Chadwick Boseman. I just want to see him in more stuff. And if that means an 80s style movie, I'm going to check it out. He's so entertaining on screen.
He's excruciatingly talented. Mm-hmm. I don't say that about many people. Are you doing cocaine right now?
I am.
Okay.
How do you think I keep up interest for this stuff?
He's making it snow.
You training for your part in Jake Gyllenhaal's movie?
I'm telling you.
Oh, Max Merkelstein.
About to give you some more information on Black Panther, but it could be considered spoilery, so I won't mention it.
Oh, we don't need any more Marvel. We can pass on Marvel for a
you
week.
You think?
Yeah, I think we're good.
You said last week we weren't talking about comic book movies this week.
We're not. This is a guy that happens to be in one. I actually like him. I wouldn't have brought up Marvel. I was 42, get on up is what I would reference. Well, that's just because I guess. All right.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. What do you want me to do? I can't control the media.
Apologize to the listeners. You promised last week that we wouldn't talk about Marvel movies. Marvel or DC movies.
Can we please go to Brian's trailer park where Brian's not at? Sure. Brian's empty trailer park. Brian's homeless shelter.
Welcome to Brian's trailer park.
All right, Brian's trailer park. Brian's not here. He is out he's picking up tools. We've got two movies we're going to talk about this week. Furious 7 is the first one. Now, if you haven't heard about the Fast and Furious movies.
First off, this is your first episode. So welcome to
The Hollywood Outsider. There were 6 other films. We're going to take you through each one. No, I'm just kidding. Essentially,
should do a Fast and Furious like a...
We should.
Talk.
Like a collective.
Seen all 7 or 6 movies like lined up and seen the way they did the name differently for like every, like it was Fast and the Furious and then Too Fast, Too Furious and
oh yeah,
and Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift and then
it was Fast and Furious and then it was Fast 5.
Now it's just Furious.
And then it was Furious 6. They actually changed it to Fast and Furious 6. Yeah, they can't decide. But this is Furious 7. They swear that's the name of the movie.
So sounds more like a Quentin Tarantino title.
So 2 movies ago they were Fast. And now they're just furious.
Now they're pissed off.
Well, they're mad because Jason Statham has killed their friend.
4 movies ago. Alert.
No, just like, well, technically, yeah, I guess it was 4 movies ago. They even play with time and space travel in the series. It's fantastic. Jason Statham stars as the bad guy. He's the villain. That's really all you need to know about this. And he has killed their friend. They're going after him. It's got Paul Walker in it. It's got Vin Diesel in it. So this is a movie that's based on stunts, action, spectacle. And family, of course, according to Vin Diesel.
These are my friends.
Watching the trailer, which they have parachuting cars.
Oh,
in the opening.
It starts off glorious.
What did you guys, Justin, I know you love this series more than even I do. So what did you think about Furious 7?
I loved it. I mean, you start off with cars reversing out of a plane to parachute down. That they somehow guide these parachuting cars down to the road where they release the parachute and take off after this bus that reveals these Gatling guns. I mean, fuck. It starts off great. It stays great. My favorite moment is when Paul Walker has to climb out of this bus that is, you know, going over a cliff and then run up the bus, jumping off as Michelle Rodriguez
spins around,
does a Tokyo drift with the tail end of her car just far enough out there that he can catch it. I mean, it makes Vin Diesel's Superman move in Fast 6 look like a pussy maneuver.
Oh, it was them all. It was tying every movie together. It was like Tokyo Drift, Fast 6, Fast 5. It was everything. Wrapped
and
in
then
one scene.
Statham starts talking. And I'm sorry, I'm such a fan of him and his movies. It is going to be very difficult for me to root against Jason Statham.
Yeah.
But you have to, because he's going after our heroes.
Do you have to, though?
He's so badass. I mean, the Rock gets out of a cast by flexing. Come on. It is so over-the-top ridiculous. I don't see how you can't just sit back and love the absurdity of what they're doing. And they know they're absurd the whole time.
This is one of those where I want to take the trailer and go back and show it to the guy that made the first movie. And this is where this series is going to go.
This is awesome. I mean, I as soon as the trailer was over with, I was like, take my money. I want this movie now.
And it's so stupid. Like,
I have to see this now.
You can't lie about it. There is nothing smart about this series.
No.
Nothing at all. And Vin Diesel, he pauses more than Brian does. I mean, every line is like family.
But he is so committed.
He's like Al Pacino and Christopher Walken and a mute all wrapped up in one.
I mean, he is Dominic Toretto.
He is.
It just looks so dumb. I cannot wait.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, that is our big movie. Watch the trailer. Go to the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you have not seen it, it's fantastically stupid. Now, the one question I do want to ask you guys, and this is serious. Paul Walker obviously lost his life in a tragic car accident. Everybody knows that.
Not involved in the filming.
Not involved in the movie whatsoever. And his brothers actually helped with filming his scene. So, you know, he's going to be part of the entire movie, which is cool. I think that's great. They managed to make that work. What I'm asking you guys is, did anything in here when you see him around fast cars and driving and everything with the way that he passed away, did that affect you or take you out of it? Because it did me at one point.
Not even a little bit.
No, I thought of it at the beginning of the trailer, and then I was so engrossed in the trailer. And
once you saw parachutes, you're like, all right, I'm
half laughing at what was going on, and I just kind of forgot about it. There's only a couple full-on shots of him anyway, like where he was. It seemed like it was more focused on
just the action.
The action. Well, I mean, but even his characters, it felt like it was focused more on Vin Diesel's character than his. So I didn't know that about his brother standing in or whatever, like he said.
They filled in for him,
which is really cool.
Finish it out.
But I just figured, well, there's, you know, we're not seeing him as much for that reason. So I didn't know they rounded that out. That's actually really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, it doesn't distract during the movie when you actually see it. You know what I mean?
No. So, what do you guys think in terms of the scope of the series? Does this look like the craziest one? Does this look like about what you would expected from the seventh movie in a franchise? What do you think?
Well, there wasn't any dragging a bank vault around.
I was just going to say
that. You know, Rio, kind of crazy. But parachuting in your car out of a plane, that's kind of fucking crazy. And it does look like I don't know if it's the beginning of the movie, but every film has got its own unique kind of what the fuckness. This one looks to just continue it. I seriously can't wait.
Should do a marathon.
I may have to marathon all of them.
Well, that comes out next year, April 3rd, 2015.
The funny thing is that first movie was like a legit, you know,
it's like an action racing movie.
It was about street racing, and that's it.
I'm surprised they even have. I swear that every time they make a new one, they're just like, "Wow, we gotta have cars in this, don't we? Shit, how do we get cars in this cool action? We'll just put parachutes on them, man. Sweet.
At some point, they're going to have wings that come folding out.
Flying cars.
Yes.
I'm surprised they don't have dogfights with airplanes at this point. They just have cars attached to the bottom.
In Fast and Furious, they literally went in a straight line the whole movie. That's true. It was all drag racing. And it was like this big twist sting operation. And
then they ended up at a 4,000-mile runway that somehow that plane ran on for 15 minutes. Whatever. The next movie is Chappie. It's Neil Blomkamp's latest film. Now, he's the director of District 9 and Elysium. And this one is almost like, Short Circuit with guns.
Yeah.
They construct a robot named Chappie. He's gifted. He's special. He's considered a prodigy. He's like a child. But he's also, he is a weapon. Now, this trailer, I knew about this film. I didn't really know what to expect from this film. Scott, what did you think going into the trailer?
I was sold within the first 15 seconds of this trailer.
Because Hugh Jackman's in it?
I didn't even know he's in it until halfway through the trailer. But
he's playing a bad guy, it looks like.
Totally different. It just looks immensely entertaining, and it just sparks my imagination more than any movie, any trailer has in quite a while. I love how the first thing that grabbed me was just how this trailer looks. As far as the robot itself, I mean, we don't have a robot like that for real that I can compare it to, but the material that he's made out of looks tactile. It looks
like tangible, real. Like you can hold it. Yeah.
I also love the childlike qualities of the robot, or he acts like a kid almost. It's kind of learning, and like you said, like he's a prodigy. But then it just seems to take a lot darker turn. I'm just so interested. This is officially on my must-see list. I can't wait to see it.
I know it's on Justin's because it's a robot movie, which means automatically right to the top of the list, right?
Well, and especially after District 9, which was such a surprise. I hope this one, I'm not expecting too much from it, because I think that's why I like District 9 so much, is because it was a surprise. What about you, Justin?
Well, I mean, Chappie, I don't see him shooting anybody or punching their hearts out. So, yeah, I don't know how high it'll be on my list. But I did really enjoy District
9.
Is it a little Mockingjay reference there?
No, it was more, there's a French parkour movie, I think, called District 13. Anyway, District 9, I loved Elysium. So I'm, of course, really curious to see this film. It does look really good. I love the way they kind of humanized this robotic character. I did not know that he was a weapon. I mean, based on that trailer, I don't remember any talk about him being a weapon. There was more just the whole, artificial intelligence being a bad thing. But I will say that...
Well, I think it's people trying to utilize him as a weapon. How's that?
Could be. Yeah. But one thing Hugh Jackman's character said is that the thing he dislikes about artificial intelligence is that it's unstable or uncertain. And a part of me just went, well, fuck, dude, so are we. So let's not act like somehow we're better than they are. There's humans of every stripe and type of psychology. So just because it's artificial doesn't make it worse. What makes it worse is when they're made out of metal and you're not.
That's true.
But no, it looks good, and I do look forward to seeing it.
And also, a little side note, Chartel Copley is the voice of Chappie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Cute robot. I got to say, I like they almost kind of look like rabbit ears.
Oh, yeah.
He does the mocap, too. It's not just his voice.
Yep.
He's doing like
Does Andy Serkis know about this shit?
You thought he's the only one that's allowed to do it?
I think he's the only one legally allowed to mocap.
Well, Chappie comes out March 6, 2015. Again, you can watch these trailers and those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Just click on the trailers tab. They're all there. And if you have a thought or a topic idea, tweet us at @H_Outsider. Like us on Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider or email us that topic idea or thought at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. That's feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Now let's go to Justin's upcoming attractions.
Justin's upcoming attractions. All right, Drac, I appreciate that. We've got four films that we're going to be talking about, all of them opening up on November 14th, two of them to a limited release initially, but there are four. So let's try it and get through these relatively quickly. First up, Foxcatcher. This is directed by Bennett Miller. It stars Steve Carell and Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo, based on the true story of Mark Schultz, an Olympic wrestler whose relationship with sponsor John DuPont and brother Dave Schultz would lead to unlikely circumstances. Really, I'm just going to throw this out there to both of y'all. Who is interested in this movie?
I am. That's the one I'm – one of the ones I'm most interested in.
And what is it about it that really draws you in?
Foxcatcher, it's the raves that it's getting. It's the performances are supposed to be Oscar-worthy. I get suckered by that kind of stuff, so I have to see those kind of movies. I've heard Steve Carell is phenomenal, and I've heard Channing Tatum is really –
Bacon?
Yes, he's Kevin Bacon.
It looks like a movie that has incredible performances that I – really, really want to see, but the story has absolutely nothing that interests me. It's about wrestling, a sport, not like WWE wrestling or anything.
Oh, we need movies about WWE wrestling.
I mean, like the actual sport of wrestling. And don't write and yell at me and tell me no, WWE is.
I will tell you, sport. WWE is not a real sport.
Okay,
it's
you said
fun
it,
entertainment.
You said it. I did
for
not.
For some people.
I don't want to ruffle any feathers, but this is like
where you're. Are you ready to ruffle?
This is like unitard wearing, you know, there's a referee and you know.
Yes, we know what wrestling is, Scott. We got it.
It just did nothing about the story interests me. It just looks like a lot of Steve Carell is a creepy old guy with a bunch of makeup on and plaster face or whatever.
That's probably why I'm into it.
Yeah. You know, staring creepily at Channing Tatum.
Well, who wouldn't? Thinking, he's a like, god. Look at him. He's chiseled.
I don't know, just creepy and I want to hear how the performances are. It looks like it's just stellar cast. Not at all interest in the story. What about you, Justin?
No interest.
Okay, then.
If it smells like sports, Justin's just automatically.
Yeah,
if it smells
wrestling
like Oscar.
In particular, I have no love for, appreciation, desire to see wrestling.
What if it had an angry robot wrestler?
Oh, now, bro. Now we're talking. Yeah, and I get Real Steel 2.
I was just going to say, I never even made that connection. He only likes sports movies if there's robots
there's
involved.
Robots.
Yeah, I don't want to watch boxing unless it's robots doing it. Then it's awesome. All right, next up, Rosewater. This is written and directed by Jon Stewart. Stars Gael Garcia Bernal. A journalist is detained in Iran for more than 100 days and brutally interrogated in prison. Now, Aaron, I've heard you discuss this movie before, and you also say that you think this one's kind of Oscar bait.
Mm-hmm.
Since you tend to like films that have that air about them, are you as excited to see this one as you would be Foxcatcher?
Absolutely. Jon Stewart is a very, very smart man. He's very entertaining. And I think he has been waiting for the right opportunity to be a filmmaker. So as far as I'm concerned, that right there draws me in. The fact that it's Oscar bait... Yeah, I mean, I like those kind of movies, so I don't have a problem with it. I like strong acting. I can love a movie just based on performances, even if a story is a little weaker. But because it's the pedigree behind the camera, that's really what wants to make me see it.
Mm-hmm. I usually am okay with Oscar bait movies, but when it gets
you don't like political movies.
Yeah, that's the thing is it's political, but Jon Stewart is kind of enough of a draw for me to see it. This is his debut as a director, mm-hmm. right? So. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see how he handles that, but I just wish I were a little bit more interested in the I'm not a politics guy at all. So,
well, when it comes to American politics, I'm not all that interested. But when it comes to this kind of thing, where it's, you know, this guy who is interrogated for being a spy, when, you know, who in their right mind would have ever really considered him to be a spy? It's kind of ridiculous, but. It's Jon Stewart's connection to the material, you know, even insofar as kind of being a part of what got him arrested in the first place. That kind of tie-in really kind of draws me in. And so I'm really curious to see this one. I don't know if I'm going to rush out to a theater and see it, but I'm definitely going to see it. It looks, for a first-time director's film, it looks really well done.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Of course, that's just from trailers, so what do I know? All right, next up we have Beyond the Lights. Now, this is written and directed by Gina Prince Bythewood, and it stars Mina Driver, Aisha Hines, and please bear with me, Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Sure, sure.
African name. A talented young musician on the brink of superstardom struggles with the pressure of her newfound success. Now, Scotty, you are a fan of music.
I am.
Are you at all interested in seeing this beautiful singer's plight.
I was surprised by how much I want to see this movie. I think it's an interesting side of pop music that we don't see. Mm-hmm. You see this kind of darker side.
It's like the objectification of women.
It's really the objectification, and it's dealing with the pressure and this kind of thing, and people looking at her for the wrong reasons and not looking at the kind of person she is. It reminds me of a more serious Notting Hill, you know, where real famous, she was a famous actress that fell in love with a normal guy.
I can see that leap.
Kind of thing. And it's got that modern spin.
It's like a Fast and Furious style leap, but
not that big of a leap, but
there's a parachute involved.
There's explosions.
Exactly. I think it looks really interesting. There is a couple lines in the trailer that I was like, huh, that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. By the way, did you say Mina Driver?
Mini.
It's Mini Driver, yeah. Isn't it? Sound like you said Mina.
Mini Driver.
Does she age? She looks exactly the same.
Yeah, she's looking a little older. I watch her on that TV show about a boy, the TV adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she's getting older, but she's a good actress. And what I like about this is that she's not playing the comedic role. She's mm-hmm. playing much the driven producer mom kind of character that, you know, that takes their flesh and blood child and turns them into a product.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised as well because I thought it was going to be Glitter Part 2.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So did I.
And then you watch it because I'll be honest, when I saw...
Or I should have Tyler Perry's Beyond the Lights. But then you watch it, you're like, oh, this actually looks like it's got real story and talent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It actually has a little bit of a story behind it. And I was really shocked because it's coming out in the middle of November, which is usually big release month.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked a little bit more into it. It actually seems like something I want to check out now. I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm not saying it's not going to be better than Glitter, but I think it looks better than Glitter.
Mm-hmm.
How could it be better than Glitter?
Nothing's better than Glitter. Mariah Carey mm-hmm. is an Oscar waiting
the
to
bomb.
Happen. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually really surprised at just how good the trailer was. And, you know, there is that whole notion of when does a person stop being a person and become a product that people buy and people have expectations of. You have to wonder sometimes how these people might chafe against the role that they're kind of thrust into, especially when they're young and really have no say in the matter. So, yeah, I kind of look forward to seeing that one, too. Last and certainly, in my opinion, least, Dumb and Dumber 2. Directed by the Farrelly brothers and, of course, starring Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. 20 years after the Dimwits set out on their first adventure, they head out in search of one of their long-lost children in the hope of gaining a new kidney. Aaron, I think you really want to see this.
What?
Please tell me why. Maybe I'm wrong in that.
You are wrong.
Okay, good.
Let's go to Scott, because we want positivity on this one before I tear it apart.
Cannot wait to see this movie. I've been waiting for this for so long.
You are wrong.
Don't say that. That's not nice.
I will say I am so worried about this about it, the quality of it. I adored the first Dumb and Dumber movie.
That's like one of your favorite movies, right?
It's one of my favorite comedies. It's just one I never get tired of seeing. Just the two of them together just make me laugh every time.
Let's all together do the most annoying sound. I'm kidding.
I'm actually planning on going on the early like Thursday night showing with a group of buddies of mine that also love the first film. I'm going in kind of expecting to be let down, but I'm just... fingers crossed, hoping not. It's just my kind of dumb humor. It seems like it was the last of those dumb movies that was dumb without being random. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, like how it seems like a lot of humor nowadays is just we just say something that just doesn't make any sense and it's funny. This was just like they were legitimately dim-witted, but likable at the same time, and they just look like they look almost the same, and they're just a little bit aged, but they've pulled off the role again, and I hope it works. I really hope it works. I'm nervous that it's not, but I can't wait to see it.
See, I hope it works for people like you that are big fans of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not a fan of it. So I guess I liked it when it came out, but that was 20 years ago. I mean, I don't find it as funny rewatching it.
But, welcome to every Kurt Russell movie for me.
Hey, I understand, man.
Touché. Wow, that's a shot across Aaron's bow.
Touché. But I don't want to knock it because I know so there's some people that are genuinely excited for it, and I hope it lives up to that. I worry, and we're going to talk about older sequels later.
Mm-hmm.
I worry whenever anything is over a few years about is it really worth doing now? Because in my opinion, and I know some people don't see it this way, in my opinion, it can taint the original. And I don't want that tainted for people that loved it. I just don't.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in tainting original, so I can't go with you there. These trailers look just fucking... They're so dumb, it's almost insulting. It's like, really? You expect me to laugh at that bullshit? It was kind of funny the first time. It's too long in the tooth now to be funny at this point. I don't think you could... If you could pay me to watch this movie, but we're talking serious cash.
Oh, I'll probably see it.
I almost refuse to dignify this movie with a viewing.
The one thing I will say is Jim Carrey has done more disservice to me wanting to see it than anything. And he used to be one of my favorite comedians around. But the last few years with his weirdness and taking shit like Mr. Popper's Penguins and then dissing Kick-Ass 2, like mm-hmm. basically shitting on everybody else's career for his own selfish need. I've got a problem with him as an actor, so that's kind of a turnoff. But I try to take the movie as something separate. So I'll still see it, but
tell me if there's a really good shitting scene, then I might check that one out on YouTube. Other than that, all I really want to see is Jeff Daniels yet again on a toilet just punishing the
wearing those one. Boots that have like frills on the end of them, so every time he stomps his feet they kind of wiggle back and forth.
I hope it's really good for your sake. I really do, sincerely. I want fans to be happy, because when you
absolutely,
it's like Indiana Jones for me, man. When Crystal Skull came out and I was so disappointed, I don't want you to go through that.
Right.
You don't deserve that, Scott.
Well, here's the thing is, no matter, even if it's bad, I'm gonna go see it with buddies and we're gonna laugh. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Even at the dumb
you
jokes in
wrong.
The trailer, it's going to be a fun time, even if it's a terrible movie. So I'm not, you know.
I would advise a few drinks before you go in.
Oh, that'll make it
that
so
might
much
help.
More fun.
That could be arranged.
I'll go pick right, Justin folks. Up and we'll get hammered and then we'll go see it. We'll probably like it a lot.
That might help. Yeah, I definitely think it would help. All right. November 14th, four films, Foxcatcher, Rosewater, Beyond the Lights, and Dumb and Dumber 2. Which of these are you most likely to run out to a theater to check out, Aaron?
I am going to see Foxcatcher, most likely.
Scotty?
Dumb and Dumber 2.
All right, and I'm going to go with Rosewater. So, look, we're all heading out to different films.
Hey, well, I guess Brian's picking Beyond the Lights. There you go, Brian.
Oh, definitely. That would have been his pick.
That definitely appeals to Brian.
I mean, it's got everything he loves.
Oh, he wants to be a singer. He's always
singers,
talked about it.
Brown people, the whole thing. I'm kidding.
Box office. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cracked $400 million worldwide.
What?
China loves their turtles. It's doing really big business. I think it's funny because everybody called that the biggest flop of the summer. And it's actually kind of
huge. Michael Bay's laughing all the way to the bank.
He's always laughing all the way to the bank. Does he ever make anything that really flops? Even Pain and Gain, which is an awful fucking travesty. And that still made $50 million.
Man, I hated that movie.
It was not good. Ouija apparently made a deal with the devil and just barely beat Nightcrawler for number one, which should be a crime and they should be arrested. That's just a personal opinion. It ended up, for second week, it was number one, $10.7 million to Nightcrawler's $10.4 million. That's
really
sad. Look how
cheap that movie was to make, too.
They were both pretty cheap. Yeah. Both cheap movies. Nightcrawler only cost like $9 million. That's all we're going to do for box office, because really...
Whoa. One quick thing.
Okay.
Can you believe John Wick dropped from second to sixth?
Yeah, I can. It's an action movie.
That's so sad.
It's an action movie. And people are getting ready. Interstellar, Big Hero 6, all these movies are hitting theaters, so people are gearing up for those.
I guess. I was just really hoping more for it.
Me too. You want a John Wick too?
Electric Boogaloo.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Next week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was Justin's pick, and it was Watchmen. Those that got it correct, Katie M., Zach Parkerson, Ashley Stewart. Nice job, guys.
That's it?
That I saw. Maybe there was an email that snuck by me, Justin. Probably 14. I'm sure they all got
Hopefully there was like 14 or 15 you missed.
I'm hoping. And if
it
I did,
an easy scene.
Be sure to email me, because I might have missed it. I don't know. It's possible.
People, when it's my pick, I always pick a movie that references somehow the topics that we're going to be touching on.
What did Watchmen reference?
Superhero movies.
Were they superhero? They were really super dicks. Really? They weren't really nice people. I wouldn't call
Who,
them
the
heroes.
Watchmen?
Yeah.
Hey, they had suits and capes, man. That makes them superheroes.
I've got a cape upstairs. Am I a superhero?
Put it on, bitch.
Well, this week it's Scott's turn. If you think you know what it is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Here's your clip.
What's your problem? I'm putting $500,000 on Lucky down to win third race at Riverside.
Can't lay that off in time. Bet like that could break us.
Not only are you a cheat, you're a gutless cheat as well.
What are the odds? 4-1. Take all of it.
All right. Now we're going to go to reviews. We've got two movies we're going to review. One is called Big Hero 6, which should be out by the time you hear this. Scott, what
is... How the fuck did you two get into this movie?
Can't talk about that. It's like Fight Club.
I'm so jealous.
And the second rule is we can't talk about
it. And I'm angry.
Don't worry. You get to lead off with Interstellar next week. How's that? Which is really more up your alley. No? All right. Yay. Well, Scott, what is Big Hero 6 about?
Well, Big Hero 6 is based off of a Marvel property that I was unfamiliar with before I saw this first trailer, but the comic is by the same name. The main character is a kid named Hero, and his older brother, Tadashi, works at a technology research and development type place.
College. And, it's like real genius.
Yeah, exactly.
In San Fran, Tokyo. And San Frokio.
San Francisco.
There you go.
Which is not a joke. It's actually in the movie. It's like a combination of San Francisco and Tokyo, which is really clever because
it's eventual, is what it is.
It is.
It's going to happen.
The Golden Gate Bridge has like pagodas on it and stuff. It's really cool, but it works. Anyway, so his older brother Tadashi works at this university, like in Real Genius, kind of like Aaron said, and he introduces Hiro to. This robot that he's built called Baymax. Now, Baymax is basically your normal robot, except for one big difference is that it's covered in a skin that makes him very fluffy and as Tadashi says in the movie, kind of huggable. Because he's a medical robot. He's supposed to help heal you if you get hurt. And the idea was that if you want someone healing you, he's supposed to be huggable. So anyway, the movie goes on and tragedy befalls and Hiro... has to cope with some grief in the movie, and it kind of takes a little bit darker turn for a little while, but Hiro overcomes and discovers Baymax, and he and Baymax kind of develop this bond together, and it's really, it's in my opinion, it's a really sweet bond that they get, and his older brother's friends from the university kind of band together to stop this unknown villain who's wearing this mask, and you don't know who he is.
That's unknown, yeah. He's an unknown villain.
He's an unknown villain, yes. It's covered by, all right.
With a paper bag on his head, the unknown
paper
villain?
Paper bag.
Yes.
They don't know who he is. It's a mystery who he is, and it's obviously all revealed towards the end of the film. But anyway, Hiro teams up with Baymax, who he's now outfitted with all this armor and all these extra upgrades because he's an inventor himself. And he teams up with these other buddies from the university, and they basically thwart evil. Sounds like a pretty basic plot, but I'm telling you, this movie's got a lot of heart to it. I really enjoyed it. I really liked where it went. And it's one of those movies that it is a Disney movie, and you automatically think kids movie. And well, let me ask you, Aaron, because we talked about this a little bit today over text. Mm-hmm. In regards to the story, whether it be in for kids or for adults, how did you feel about it?
I felt it was an everybody's story. Mm-hmm. I don't – you know, I know some people think that – cartoons or animated movies, they're either for kids or they're, you know, Pixar movies tend to be more adult skewing, but somehow kids can still enjoy them. I just thought it was a kid's movie that adults can enjoy.
Yes.
I think it's very goofy. It's silly. The story is something you've seen 20 times before, but rarely done as fun as this one, mm-hmm. is how I would phrase it. And I keep calling him Betamax because I'm a kid, child of the 80s. But it's actually Baymax, and he voiced so well and clever, and his little – he never breaks robot form. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always a robot, and he's a care robot. He's a health provider, basically, is what his role is. And he never breaks that character throughout the movie. Even when he's fighting crime and everything, he's still a robot that cares. And mm-hmm. and I think it's nice that, you know, in all of these dark superhero flicks and all this angst – you've got something that's, even though it has kind of a darker storyline at one point, it's really about hope and it's bright and happy mm-hmm. and fun.
It's a movie that makes you smile. And I feel like we haven't had one of those.
Smile the whole time.
And not smile just in a slapsticky kind of way, mm-hmm. but in a warm your heart kind of way, but also being genuinely funny at the same time.
And I want to point, and no spoilers, but we were talking about stingers. One of the best movie stingers I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
So stick around after the credits.
Totally worth it. Yeah. Did not see that coming. Yep. Now, I only recognize a couple of the actors in this one. I know Alan Tudyk was probably the most recognizable one, but the kids, I did not recognize at all. How did you think the voice cast did in this movie?
I don't pay attention to who they are, so right. I really don't know. I didn't know anybody's voice except for the college professor. Mm-hmm. So they're all fine. Funny.
But I think you said it best earlier. Baymax really kind of steals the screen whenever he's on. They make his voice sound robotic without sounding not human. Does that make sense? Like he almost has this care to him, and just everything is just bright and sunshiny mm-hmm. and everything is pleasant, and even when things are rough, it's just he's just so fun to watch. I liked him a lot. And then just move on to the production a little bit. I think that this did a good mix of the action and the emotional side of things, because the action scenes were brilliant. There's these little hero builds these little tiny robots that millions of them kind of gather together to do all kinds of things for them, and that was just it was flowing when you saw it happen.
It was like almost nanobot technology is almost mm-hmm. what it was.
Yeah. It was really cool. How did you find the action scenes in this one?
I mean, it's an animated movie. It's a beautifully done movie. I don't think you need to see 3D, by the way, mm-hmm. but it's a beautifully done movie. It's beautifully shot. I don't really consider them. I didn't think they were so much action scenes. They were just the movie was just fun. I didn't really see it as like set pieces. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was one consistent narrative. The story made sense. It flowed smooth. It wasn't like some kids' movies where there were scenes where I'm just like, oh, God, I can't wait for this to get over. I really enjoyed it as a movie, not as a kids' movie. I just enjoyed it.
Right. I actually like that it felt more geared towards kids, because I think that a lot of them...
I didn't feel that way. I felt it was pretty much open.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But let's go on and do our final verdict here. Aaron?
$10 is the full price of admission. I would easily give it $8.50. I was surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. Mm-hmm. And especially like over the several days, I saw two great movies, so I highly recommend it.
Well, I apparently liked it a little bit better than you. I actually gave it a $9 out of 10 instead. I just thought it was so much fun and something I can't wait to see again. Don't think that 3D is necessary, but definitely one to take your kids to see, and you'll still have a good time with it as well.
Justin, Nightcrawler.
All right, well, this film is a crime thriller starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It's directed by... Dan Gilroy, who this is his first actual directorial effort. Before this, he was known primarily as a screenwriter. He wrote the screenplays for Free Jack. If any of you want to cast your mind back way into the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But he also wrote the screenplays for, speaking of earlier, Real Steel. And he also wrote The Bourne Legacy. But this film is a... different type of film than those others. This is a very down-to-earth, very gritty, slightly stylized movie. The little synopsis says, when Lou Bloom, a driven man desperate for work, muscles into the world of L.A. crime journalism, he blurs a line between observer and participant to become the star of his own story. Aiding him in his efforts is Nina, a TV news veteran. She's played by Renee Russo. You're also going to find a fellow stringer, which is what they call these guys who come in at night to film these crime scenes when the news cameramen, who are, of course, in the unions, they don't work at night. These stringers are also called night crawlers, go out there and get the shots and then sell them to network affiliates for their news. This is a very unusual film, and the trailer was a bit more quirky than I felt like the movie was by the time I got to the end of it. But Jake Gyllenhaal brings a level of what to this movie that I think raises it above where it might probably just by looking at the page maybe should have gone to. Aaron, what did you think first off of the story of this guy who, for all intents and purposes, just kind of looks like a sociopathic robot?
You know, the way I saw the movie is it's an American success story for today's cynical hipsters, really. And he reminded me of people I know, because they will just do anything to make it. And he is that guy. You know, he is somebody who is driven to succeed, and he doesn't care about anybody or anything. He only cares about what he wants. And he's extremely smart. He actually has a good plan. And if this was any other movie, like if Disney made this, he'd be played by Kevin Costner, and it would end with rainbows and puppies and everything. But it is not that. It is not Disney movie. It is dark, 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 dark. I really like the story because for me it was dark, it was haunting, it was original, and I honestly haven't seen a movie this original in a long time. It reminded me kind of like the first time I saw Memento, where I kind of knew what the story was, but I had no idea where it was going.
Yeah.
And the whole movie, I mean, is just slapped on Gyllenhaal's back and he just drags it across.
Yeah, I mean, he's carrying this thing like a champ the whole way through. I mean, that's not to take away from Rene Russo and Bill Paxton and his partner, Jake Gyllenhaal, has a partner in the film. I'm not quite, what was this? Do you remember what his name was?
He played Rick, is who he played.
He is so good in this film too, but really it's Gyllenhaal that has to, you know, as you said, put this movie on its back and carry it. But he does it so well, and he does it almost like it looks effortless, which is kind of scary because this is a very strange man. I could see elements of sociopathy within him. He definitely is broken up in the head because he has a very hard time interfacing with other people in a human way. He's all about facts. He's all about doing his research, but he's not about emotion. He's not about bringing people inside. He just kind of treats the world almost, he almost felt like he was giving an infomercial kind of speech the entire time he was talking, because he's all about delivering this information at a very deliberate pace that I thought was just phenomenal. And I thought the story was something I'd never seen before, but
and the way he analyzes events and moves forward, and he just puts everything out there. I mean, there's a scene where he is basically negotiating with Rene Russo's character. And what he's negotiating, I won't explain what it is, but it's really lecherous. But he puts it in a way that, wow, he logistically makes sense. Like, this actually makes business sense, what he's saying. So he actually thinks everything out and articulates his plan and then goes for it. He just doesn't care.
Performances. Gyllenhaal is the star of this. I think, do you agree with me that this is probably going to earn him a Best Acting nomination for the Oscars?
I think if it doesn't, that would be a great crime.
It'd be a shame.
I have not been blown away by one actor in a long time, and he did it.
He is... It's when you're watching it, it's so hard to remember. He's not actually, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal's not like this guy, but he plays it with such truth and conviction. I mean, he just talks. He doesn't blink. He doesn't emote a lot. He just talks, and he does it, you know, very much on a beat, and it's so good. But he's not the only actor in it. What did you think of Paxton, Russo, and Rick?
Riz Ahmed plays Rick.
Okay.
The trick about this movie is all the performances are very good. There's nobody in it that's bad. It's just Gyllenhaal is so brilliant at what he's doing. He basically makes everybody else his bitch throughout the movie. It honestly is one of those performances, like Justin said, you walk out of the movie and you see Gyllenhaal in something else, but I don't care if it's Brokeback Mountain, and you're afraid of the guy. You're instantly, you connect him with this character. That's how well he was, how good he was in the movie.
Now, does he start out that way, or is there like a...
Yes, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't start out as a nightcrawler. He starts out doing something completely different, but he's just one of those guys. It seems like his motivation is to become successful. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, at doing something he's good at and that he, quote-unquote, enjoys. When he comes across this idea of being a stringer, someone who films these things and sells them, you know, it stimulates a part of his mind that none of these other jobs have. And so he becomes incredibly motivated to become the most successful of one of these stringers that he could possibly be. And so he puts all of his, what I would consider to be, you know, considerable intellect and attention to detail and ability to focus to bear on doing that. And he does a fantastic job. But I thought Rene Russo was so good in this. I feel like it's been forever since I've seen her.
Yeah, she was good.
And something. And I really enjoyed, you know, her performance as this woman who is the best of her career was probably in her past. She's just kind of, you know, she does what she knows how to do, but she doesn't have her heart in it. And, you know, through this movie, she kind of regains some of that. And I really enjoyed her quite a bit. Last question for you, though, Aaron. Well, second to last. This is Dan Gilroy's first film. Would you have thought that going when you left the theater?
No. And he does something that most directors aren't smart enough to do. Is he has a movie that's based in L.A., and it's like a character in the film. It's shot so that the locales, the cinematography, everything else, it just creates a world that felt real. Like, I'm there. I understand, you know, this why, how the city works, how these people work, what's going on. I just felt real. And most directors don't capture that, I don't think, in a movie. Michael Mann is a director that normally does very well with this. I think Dan Gilroy's a guy to watch. Absolutely.
I really cannot wait to see what he does next.
Mm-hmm.
I usually don't go see movies that we've already reviewed or that I can't review on the show anymore. You guys are making me really want to go check this movie out.
Why wouldn't
you? You need to go see it. You should go see it.
Why wouldn't you go see a movie if we already talked? Just because you still haven't seen it?
No, I know. I mean, something like that, I'll usually wait till like DVD or something.
Oh,
like
I got
you. But I'm not, you know. But I'm seriously considering going to check this one out because it just sounds so interesting.
It's great.
All right. Well, Aaron, $1 out of $10, how much would you pay to go see this movie?
It's rivaling Guardians and Planet of the Apes as my favorite of the year, so I give it $9.
I'm going to give it $8.50. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. For me, it you know, if you're wanting to compare it to other movies, especially Guardians, they're so different. It's hard to compare. Guardians, I had much more fun at, but this one was a more movie, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. It didn't have to rely on...
A real movie?
You beat me to it.
It doesn't have to rely on any kind of special effects or, you know, whiz-bang stuff. It's all pure performance. But I definitely give this one an 8.50 out of 10. And it's probably the best performance by an actor I've seen this year by far.
If he doesn't get a nomination, I will honestly be pissed. That's how good he was.
I mean, he's got a strong case here for a win.
No, I think at this point he does win. But I mean, I haven't seen everything else that's coming out. Let's go to Blu-ray and video on demand, Scotty.
November 11th, we've got three films and one TV show and then some video on demands as well. First up, How to Train Your Dragon 2. This is the sequel to How to Train Your Dragon. When Hiccup and Toothless discover an ice cave that is home to hundreds of new wild dragons and the mysterious dragon rider, the two friends find themselves at the center of a battle to protect the peace. Justin reviewed this one on episode 146, where he gave it a 7.50. Second one that none of us saw, which was Tammy. After losing her job and learning that her husband has been unfaithful, a woman hits the road with her profane, hard-drinking grandmother. That stars Melissa McCarthy and Susan Sarandon. Next up, in what seems to be a lost opportunity, Let's Be Cops is released right after Halloween.
That's a good point, actually, now that I think about it.
Two struggling pals dress as police officers for a costume party and become neighborhood sensations. But when these newly minted heroes get tangled in a life web of mobsters and dirty detectives, they must put their fake badges on the line. Aaron reviewed this on episode 154. Only give it 4.50.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. All the jokes are in the trailer. Go watch the trailer again.
I don't like to be in I Told You So, but I Told You So.
I know people that love that movie. I don't understand it, but good for them.
And last film we've got on disc is Jersey Boys. It's the story of four young men from the wrong side of the tracks in New Jersey who came together to form the iconic 1960s rock group, The Four Seasons. I reviewed that one on episode 147 and gave it a 5.50. And then lastly, we've got the final season of True Blood is now available on disc.
Why don't they just call it Nudity of the Series? Or Sex Scene of the Series? Something like that. That's really all that show is.
Is it?
Yeah, there's like no story there. Everybody I know that watches it, every single person says, I watched it because I had to see how it ended. What did you like about the show? Nothing.
Anna Paquin's nudity.
Yep, Anna Paquin's nudity. I don't know a single person, and I've talked to a lot of people that watch it. Nobody said, I freaking love this show. Not one person.
I'm sure
there's some people that do like it, but I haven't. It seems like the ending was not what they had hoped it would be.
Well, last we got two movies that are available on video on demand.
You sound thrilled. You're like, whatever.
I
don't care about Anna Paquin's nipples. And you're wrong about that.
You are wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
First one we got on video on demand comes out on November 14th. It's called Miss Meadows. This one I had not heard of until we got this, and I have to see this movie.
It's Katie Holmes, bitch.
Katie Holmes. It's a story centered on a proper elementary school teacher who's played by Katie Holmes, who moonlights as a vigilante. That's awesome. It's like
it's your dream job.
Guess what I've been doing, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Also on November 14th is Wolves. This is the coming-of-age story of Caden Richards. Forced to hit the road after the murder of his parents, Caden wanders, lost without purpose, until he meets a certifiable lunatic named Wild Joe, who sets him on a path to the ominous town of Lupine Ridge to hunt down the truths of his history. But in the end, who's really hunting whom?
Yeah. Yeah. We got that.
Well, you left out the probably the biggest name in that cast.
The only name in that cast.
Jason Momoa.
Channing Tatum.
Oh, sorry. That's what he's going to look like in a few years, right?
Oh, yeah. Jason Momoa. That's his like personal. I think he really thinks it's going to be something. He's wrong.
I did want to throw out for VOD. This week on iTunes, they have a bundle of all three of Nolan's Batman films that you can buy for $15. All three of them come with an F-ton of extras. And they also have a Man of Tai Chi, 99-cent rental.
Hopefully
and
by the
get
time
your Keanu Reeves on.
Hopefully by the time you listen to this, it'll still be there.
Yes.
Otherwise, you can be pissed at Justin for making you miss that sale.
Hey, be pissed at yourself. You should have been checking.
Now we go to From the Outside In, where we talk about a topic that's on ours or a listener's minds. How long is too long for a sequel? Dumb and Dumber's coming out. You know, we talked about that earlier. And it's been 20 years since the original movie. So we thought it would be a good time to discuss this occasional occurrence of when a sequel comes out long after the original flick. It doesn't happen too often for these. I mean, usually sequels come out 2, 3, 4 years max. It definitely rarely happens where it's 20. Sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 7 or 8. But, that's a long time to expect people to remember characters, remember the situations, to actually still want to see it. Look at Rush Hour 3. I mean, that was 6 or 7 years, and that was, night and day from the second movie. So the first question I have for you guys is, should we, and this is for you, Scott, should we have some kind of time limit for sequels?
I don't really think so. I mean, I know it's, like you're talking, if it's over 20 years or something like that, people don't even remember it anymore, but there's always going to be an audience that never even saw the first one or never even heard of it, and this new one comes out, and all of a sudden it's on advertisements everywhere, and oh, this is a sequel? What's the first one? Maybe I want to go back and check that out. You know, they might have otherwise never have seen that first film if they hadn't heard of the sequel. So, I don't think there should be like we should tell them not to make sequels. I mean, it's not going to ruin the experience of the first one. At least not for
me. Well, for Aaron, it does.
Well, let's put this to point, counterpoint, whatever. How do you see it in terms of a movie you liked when it came out? At what point do you, as a moviegoer, I know you're going to say the whole, well, the script's good enough, da, da, da. You as somebody who liked that movie, when do you consider it personally, all right, maybe it's a little too long. It's a little too late for a sequel now. I really don't want a sequel for that particular property. Do you feel different about, like, comedies versus an action movie? Like, American Pie took 10 years. Some people thought, I really don't care about them anymore. Whereas and Scream 4 came out long after Scream 3 and some, obviously by the box office, people just didn't care anymore. Do you think there's for people a limit to how long they're going to give a shit about a franchise, or it's just because of so many other movies came out, they just got tired of them?
I don't think there should ever be any kind of rules imposed on filmmakers, whether we're talking about length of time for a sequel or how the film, or what makes a real movie, or anything like that. You used a mocking tone when you said, "Well, if the screenplay is good enough, that's the truth. If the story that they've created is good enough, it's compelling. If it works, then fucking go for it. But if you're just churning out a movie strictly because you're wanting to capitalize on, a beloved or an established brand, then no, don't. But if you've got a good enough story, then do it. I mean, I've got two examples that I think are really good sequels that are over 20 years past when the first movie came out. And they worked because the stories were there and they had talented people to make it. I'm not going to make some arbitrary rule that says when a movie can or can't be made, because you never know when you're going to get that good one.
So for you as a moviegoer, is there anything where you're like, I think that's past? The time for that particular property is past.
I don't. Mostly because I just want a good story. I really don't care how long a franchise has been out there. But then again, I'm a huge fan of speculative fiction, which is, you know, and moviedom quite often has a long lineage associated with it. I mean, granted, episode one wasn't everything that it could have or should have been, but would I rather have not had it? No. I would much rather have that movie out than nothing at all, because I don't think we would be where we're at today with episode seven happening were it not for that film coming out and everything else that came out around it that maintained the franchise's, you know, awareness and longevity. So no.
What about if an actor or an actress have burned themselves into your memory as bad news, but the story's good? Like, say, Mean Girls. Lindsay Lohan, that was her breakout movie. It's been 10 years. Two, 3 years after that came out, that Mean Girls 2 would have been a hit. Nowadays, I think people would be turned off, even if the story was great, just because it's Lindsay Lohan, we don't care about her anymore.
Well, I even think more so than the actor, and I was actually going to bring this point up with your mention of Scream earlier. I think it has less to do with the actor and more to do with a movie like Scream and a movie like Mean Girls. I can't believe I'm comparing those two movies now.
They both got bitchy women in them.
Well, no, movies like that were a novelty. Well,
Gail Weathers, she was bitchy.
I mean, granted, the Scream movies had three sequels after the original, but the original Scream and Mean Girls both they were a novelty. They were something different. They were something that we hadn't seen before. It was Scream was you know, horror movies making fun of horror movies. Mean Girls was showing what it's like to be in high school and these, I don't know, it was just a fresh idea kind of. And I think making a sequel to something that's no longer fresh is going to hurt it more than even like a Lindsay Lohan or someone that you don't like anymore. Does that make sense?
I think it's just been – it's a retread. Mm-hmm. It's just been done and done and done again.
Right. I mean, by the time the fourth Scream movie came around, granted, that was a pretty solid
flick. I really liked it. I thought it was really good.
It
was really good. But I think the joke had kind of worn off by the time the third one came.
The novelty.
Right. You know what I mean? Mean Girls, obviously, we didn't get a sequel, so there's no comparison there. But I think that plays a big part in it.
But going back to my point, what about the actors, though? Somebody like Lindsay Lohan, there are people that literally detest her now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's done it to herself. I don't feel bad for her. But do you think, even if the story was good, that that's a movie that should be made? And I know nobody wants to get into that, but is it a movie you would care about because of the fact you're sick of that actress?
You know, as much as people love to watch a celebrity crumble, I think we like comeback stories even more.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be my hope that if they were to do Mean Girls 2 and she was in it, that this would be her opportunity to come back from all the bullshit that she's been up to. Because she was seriously good in Mean Girls, and she had a very promising career that she snorted up her nose. But if she can come back from that and put in a good performance, we could have blown off Robert Downey Jr. Time ago. But he brought himself back, and I wouldn't mind seeing her do the same. But I don't know if she's capable of that.
Now, on the same token, when you've got something where, you know, we've had the Indiana Jones issue, where some people say you raped my childhood. I don't agree with that, even though Indiana Jones was one of my favorites. Episode one, some people say I raped a childhood. I think that's a gross, extreme exaggeration of the case. Crystal Skull wasn't that bad. It just wasn't as good as it could have been. Mm-hmm. And they took some chances that were just dumb.
It's like episode one.
Yeah, exactly. Just like episode one. They're not horrible movies. Unfortunately, people have such a high regard from the original films that I really think it'd be hard for just about anything to measure up. It would have to be fantastic. But if you take nostalgia glasses and you look at something like The Goonies, they've been talking about doing a sequel to that one forever. That's been, what, 30 years almost. It's almost 30 years, if not already.
Yeah, at what point is it no longer a sequel but a reboot?
Well, but they want to – there's people talking about doing a sequel with the same actors. With right. Brant and you know, Josh Astin. Brolin, Sean Astin, Duda. And Corey Feldman going to pop up. I mean, you know he's willing to do it because he'll do anything. Is that something you guys would still want to see, even if the story's good? Or is that – see, that for me, I don't want that. For me personally, I don't want – even if the story was fucking fantastic, I don't want it. I just – I'm fine with the memory I have unless you're going to do something for a current age, you know, or something totally different. I just don't want the same characters. Bring – I'd rather a reboot of something like that.
But it's not – I mean, I understand that when you're asking us questions, you're asking how we personally feel about something. Yeah. But I always – you know, I can't help but kind of look beyond myself to the
matter. What? Since when?
Maybe I don't want something, but when that doesn't start? Mean that the rest of the audience that's out there doesn't want it. I mean, just because I have an affection for a particular movie doesn't mean that I don't think everyone else should – get to enjoy
it. I get that. I'm asking your really opinion. Good film. You personally is what I'm asking. You personally.
No. I mean, if they have, like I said earlier, if they've got a good story, do I want to see those characters come back and now their children are doing it and so it's basically just a retread? No. I would love to see them take it, you know, into the modern age. How would these kids, you know, if they'd had cell phones in the original movies, they'd be a much different movie. If they'd had GPS in those original movies, it would be a much different.
That's a really good
Make
point.
That different one. Make it now. Make it to where these kids, instead of having a skeleton key that's hundreds of years old, maybe they've got their cell phone with a GPS.
You find one of those GPS caches or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, maybe it all starts off as like a geocache and becomes something much different. You know, make it a modern take on that story. But I would love to see Sean Astin in the movie as he's watching maybe his little boy or his little girl run off and having fun. I think it'd be a blast. As much as we love Goonies, I don't blame kids who are, you know, our age that we were when we saw it, but they're that age now, maybe not connecting with it as much. I don't blame them for that.
I would love the idea. I think just the novelty of seeing that. The original cast from 30 years ago. Was it 30 years ago, really?
Yes, yeah.
30 years ago?
It was 87, I want to say.
Is Short Round still around? Yeah, what's he doing?
Wait, you just assume he like ended up as a crackhead?
No, but he didn't do it. I don't remember seeing him anything else other than that in Indiana Jones. I don't remember ever. Booty Traps.
I still think he should have came back, by the way. He should have. 1985. That was 1985, so yeah, it'll be 30 years next year. Get on it, apparently, if you're going to do it.
Yeah. I just think the novelty of having all the original cast coming back and getting together, that just seems neat. I mean, we have...
Would you want another sequel to Back to the Future?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Back to the Future 4? I would be all over that with, like,
So you guys are all about taking a chance with your own personal nostalgia.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And stop thinking about wide majority. Everybody else can have their own opinion. We're talking our opinions.
That's what I'm doing, yeah.
You would definitely want Back to the Future 4.
Absolutely.
Would you want a Matrix 4, Justin?
Oh, God, yes. You want sign it up now? Give me, please. I'll pay ahead
of time. The Wachowskis could make a porn and he would want to see it.
Yes. I'm sure they have.
Can you imagine the bullet time with that kind of money shot? Just dodging. Oh God!
He is the one.
I don't hold my childhood loves to such a degree that I can't have something fresh come along based on them. I'm always about taking a chance.
But you got to remember too. I mean, obviously you got kids, Aaron, but Justin and I don't.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
If we had kids, that would be a way to be able to experience it with them. They, you know,
I experienced it with my kids with the actual movie,
right? But
the original movie, the real movie, with the real movie.
Oh my God! You know what I'm saying? If I had kids now, they're probably not going to see the Goonies.
No, they're not. Well, see, the thing I think about it is it's nearly impossible to recapture nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I think it's virtually impossible, and for some reason, everybody keeps wanting that, and then their movie comes out. And very, very rarely do I ever hear anyone go, thank God they made that movie. Because it's like reliving that thing that I remembered from 10, 15 years ago. I never hear anybody say that. every single time something is, say, 10 or more years old and they make a sequel to it, every single time you hear disappointment. And that's why I'm asking. I think it's a legitimate question because the history says that, you know, everybody says if a great story, da-da-da. Well, apparently these great stories aren't coming because there aren't that many that you can think of. I can think of far more flops than I can hits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's you're going to find that, though, with any artistic medium, you're going to find more things that didn't quite work as well as those that did. Because if that were otherwise, things that were great wouldn't be so special.
Yeah.
This is true. And like Jim Carrey, 20 years ago, he had the coolest rubber face ever. Now there's lines all over it. It doesn't move the same. It's going to, you know, he's got to lube it up before he can make any faces.
Well, but if time is a factor, I mean, how many years after Ace Ventura 1 did the second one come out? A couple of years? And it sucked balls.
I like the second
so
one.
So I don't think time is really
it was pretty
so
bad.
The Monopoly guy. Factor.
It's the performances and the story involved. And I'm sorry, Nature Calls was a turd. Yeah.
I laughed.
A cinematic turd.
A different kind of comedy.
I laughed.
A shitty kind of comedy.
No, I laughed. I thought it was funny. It was not is clever, but it was still funny. I laughed. That Monopoly guy thing, I still see it and I laugh my ass off.
I get grossed out with the birthing hippo scene.
Yeah, that was a little odd. It's like why are you getting birthed from a fake? I don't understand what just happened. Well, when is it a good idea? When do you guys think it is the most opportune time to crack open an old franchise? Because they're trying to just reinvent everything at this point, or sequelize everything, or reboot everything. When's a good point, like, say, Lethal Weapon or Die Hard or any other franchise you can think of, when is it the right time to – we got to jump on it for you guys?
For me, it's a combination of probably a lot of factors. One, when you've got the right fucking story. Two, it's probably best to do it around an anniversary date. And three, if you can generate – some attention regarding the original material well enough in advance that when the sequel gets closer, people aren't as maybe knee-jerk in their negative reaction to it. But maybe you've, through an advertising campaign and social media, you've kind of been able to take that nostalgia and recreate it a little bit or you know, generate some good feelings and vibes in a new audience, then that's when you want to do it. But kind of coming out of the blue on, you know, 13th year or whatever, I mean, you know, a good round number is usually good.
Oh, yeah. I think anniversary is the right time because it makes sense. If you're going to come back to it, mm-hmm. 5, 10, 15 years is really when you should do it.
Any number that ends in a 0 or a 5.
Yep, pretty much.
All right, so what do you guys think? What's the worst example of waiting too long for a sequel?
Worst one. I had a few, but I'm not going to do the honorable mention thing. But
you can do whatever because Brian didn't show up.
That's true. First one I had was Terminator 3. The Terminator 2 came out in 91, and then 2003 rolled around, and we got Terminator 3, and that movie was just boring to me. There was just nothing exciting about Rise of the Machines. All I remember
that robot got older. How is that possible? Somebody explain that.
He was another model. They just decided to make him look a little more rugged.
Right. The rugged model.
The rugged model. Oh, the backwoods model. Yeah.
What about you, Aaron?
What, you had an honorable mention? Go ahead, man.
Well, I don't want to take a chance.
Oh, you're so thoughtful because Justin would just rip it all out. He'd just take them. Crocodile Dundee and L.A.
Is that the second one?
That was the third one.
Third one.
It was 13 years after part two. And you want to know the difference. Crocodile Dundee 2 made $215 million worldwide. Part 3 made $36 million worldwide. That's a huge difference, I think. People were sick of...
Oh, poor Paul Hogan.
I know. I mean, he was so desperate to bust that up. But that movie was just dumb.
Didn't he leave his wife to marry his female co-star?
Yeah, he sure did. Mm-hmm. Linda Kozlowski.
Are they still together?
No, I think they're divorced too. Good. I could be wrong. It's a very, if you look into it, there's an interesting story between about how it got made because the writer, basically Paul Hogan fought for screenwriting credit. It's a real, real long story. You should Google it. It's really interesting. But the movie was just shit. And him and his kid was creepy. And I like Paul Hogan. I'm actually a fan of Paul Hogan. I really like the first two movies for whatever shameless reason I have.
First one was good.
First one was good. Second one was okay. I mean, he was really charming. He was a really charming guy. And, you know, just that fish out of water story and everything, it just didn't work the third go around. It was too long after the first two. Justin?
Well, mine kind of contains part of your title, Escape from L.A. 15 years later, what a turd. I mean, come on, Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. What were you thinking?
He was surfing. He was surfing.
Oh, what was it, to or away from L.A. prison?
He was just in. He was in L.A. prison.
God, it was so fucking awful. Just terrible.
You want to know the worst thing about that movie? And I saw it in the theater like four times.
That I saw it?
Yeah. Four times?
It's Snake Plissken. Yeah, I did. It's Kurt Russell. I love that character.
God, your man crush for him is powerful.
I still like that movie. The very end of that movie, I love. The very
Escape
last
from
scene,
L.A.?
Yes, the very last scene, I think, is exactly what should have happened in the movie. I thought it was great where he basically...
I don't remember it because everything leading up to that was terrible.
He basically shut down the country and reverted everybody back. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I just thought that was a really cool ending. But it was a $50 million movie. 50. And this is, you know, back in the 90s. That was a shitload of fucking money.
That's like Transformers level of money.
Yeah, this day and age it is. And it looked like it was a $3 movie. Special effects, it was like a fucking glider, like one you would throw in your backyard was coming in L.A. And then you've got the tidal wave that he's riding. So hokey and cheesy. Everything about it was just hokey and cheesy. Bruce Campbell even annoyed me. I don't know what. I agree with you 100%.
How does that happen?
It was dumb. And Kurt Russell was so fantastic. Don't get me wrong. That hair, that coif is beautiful. That coif is beautiful. What about the best? What's your best option, Justin?
Well, I've got two.
Okay.
The first one, The Color of Money.
Nice. Great.
25 years after The Hustler. But this is what I'm talking about when it comes to a good story and great performances, because Tom Cruise and Paul
Newman.
Thank you.
Did you have to search?
I did. I'm sorry.
For Paul Newman's name.
Paul Newman. Shame on names. You. They were fantastic. The song was fantastic. Everything about this movie was so good that when I first saw it, I didn't know it was a sequel. I just thought it was a movie. It was only afterward that I learned that it was a sequel to The Hustler, which is in its own right a really good movie. So boom, 25 years, they come out with a good one. This next one, I like it, but I understand many others do not. But 20 years after they made Tron Legacy, which I think is a fantastic sequel.
I loved it.
It looks so much better than the first movie, which granted 28 years, of course it's gonna.
I would hope so.
But at least it's not a fucking boring ass film like Tron is.
I thought they were both boring, but that's my opinion.
I could see why you would think that, and in another version of me might, but I really love the world. I love the story. I loved what they did with Clue and Jeff Bridges. I thought Olivia Wilde's character was so good. I thoroughly enjoyed Tron Legacy, and it was 28 years in the making, and it's kind of worth it.
Man, now you want to go watch Tron Legacy again. I like that movie.
That Daft Punk soundtrack.
The soundtrack is good.
Glorious.
Yeah, it's a great soundtrack. Scotty?
I have two as well. Can I do both of them?
Sure.
My first one, I'm pretty certain neither of you have, is American Reunion from the American Pie series.
Definitely not. I wasn't a fan.
I liked it because I liked the original American Pie. I thought the two in the middle, the second one, and then the one about the wedding.
One sucked.
Yeah, it was just really bad.
The
and then
third one, right?
Yeah, that's the third one.
Yeah, the third one came out in 2003, and the last one came out in 2012, and it was exactly what I wanted. It felt like it was going back to the original one, which was – there was a lot of nostalgia playing in that one for me. So I know it's not a popular opinion, but my big one was Toy Story 3.
Good call.
Toy Story 2 came out in 1999, and then Toy Story 3 came out in 2010. So that's like 11 years. And that is probably the best one in the trilogy. It's probably the best of the three. Such a good movie.
I don't know. I think I like the second one a little bit better, but it is definitely a good film.
The third one's the only one that made me cry.
Yeah.
And oh, God, the ending of that.
Yeah, the ending made me cry.
Yes, I did weep. For multiple reasons. One, like the holding hands thing, and then the very end, how they wrapped it all up was just so touching and so good.
And I want to mention another one that I forgot before we move on to my favorite. Two Jakes. I'm a huge Chinatown fan. Chinatown is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's a beautifully done movie. Beautiful story. If you've never seen it, you must see it. It's one of the best films you'll ever see, in my opinion. But they made a sequel, The Two Jakes. And even as much as I like Jack Nicholson outside of The Shining, I just wanted that movie to die. And it was horrible. It's like, why? It's a movie that never should have gotten a sequel to begin with, because the story just doesn't lend itself to it. And then the movie was just, it was just awful. But that's, sorry. I just want to throw that in before I forgot. My favorites, Live Free or Die Hard. I'm a big fan of that one. People say, yeah, fuck you. I don't care if he's jumping on a jumbo jet. I still liked it. I had a lot of fun. Actually, the only thing I really was kind of about was Timothy Oliphant, who normally I love.
He was kind of weird in that movie.
Yeah, he just wasn't as good as he could have been.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't bringing the Oliphant to it, you know?
Exactly. The Oliphant. Fuck yeah! You know that. He wasn't bringing it. But that was 12 years after Part 3. I thought it was a damn fun movie, and I have two as well. Sudden Impact, which came out 7 years after The Enforcer. It's a Dirty Harry movie.
Oh.
And Dirty Harry, it was like the perfect time for a comeback. I mean, Ronald Reagan was so happy. Basically, that movie got him elected because, you know, he used this, stole his slogan and everything else. It's just Dirty Harry was one of those characters. When I was a kid, I loved those movies, and I thought he was done. And then they did Sudden Impact and brought that character back, and I was so fucking giddy. I can't even explain it. It's stupid, but I love Clint Eastwood, so I was so happy. Now you got some Facebook replies from people.
Sure do. Craig Schermerhorn says, depends on the movie and star. If it's a teen star in an action movie or young 20s, they could still pull it off 15 or 20 years later if they stay in shape. Wait the same 20 years, and even a Wolverine won't be able to pull off badass at 65 like he can at 45. I don't know, Craig. There's something mystical going on with the Jackman.
What about Val Kilmer? You think he could come back and do a sequel to anything at this point?
No.
He could roll on stage.
Have you seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang yet, Justin?
Fuck off. Let's continue.
Steve Peterson says, how long was it between Last Crusade and Crystal Skulls?
19 years.
Seriously, though, I don't think time matters at all. Script is what matters. Both Toy Story 3
holla,
and Scream 4 came out over 10 years after their previous films, and both were really good. Batman and Robin came out only 2 years after Batman Forever, and that was awful.
Yeah, see, making our point.
That's true.
Amy Hutchinson says, I think it depend on the movie. There's an S there, Amy. An example of too long, in my opinion, is Dumb and Dumber, Dumb and Dumber 2. I personally think the time has passed for that. I have zero interest in the new movie. I'm with you.
Scott is crying inside. I hope you love it, Scott.
The problem is that it. I'm just probably going to be super disappointed.
You know? I want you to enjoy it, man. I want it to be better than Anchorman was, that's for sure.
I want your fake laughter to mask the pain inside.
My fake laughter. Stephen White says, as long as the script is good, time doesn't matter.
Thank you. David McGrath says, I'm still waiting for the Ferris Bueller sequel. Aren't we all?
Yes. That would be awesome.
Sadly, it wouldn't be directed by the man who should be directing it.
That's true.
Revisiting someone at different key moments in their lives, teens, parenthood, middle age, etc., can work really well with the right talent and cover a long time span, which kind of makes me think of the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, and Before Midnight movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all take place, you know, how many years between each one of them? Like 10 at least? 10,
5 or 10, yeah. It's a beautiful series, too.
Yeah, and I think they all work for their specific moments. And I love that they're movies about these people in that time.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to recapture what they were like in the beginning. It's following an evolution of character. I like that.
Douglas Clayton says, I'm still waiting for the next Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, keep waiting on that one. Yeah. Paul Showalter, if it's the story I love and want to revisit, well, then it doesn't matter how long it is. When was the last Star Wars movie? But if it's a movie I think sucks, well, then the next day would be past due.
Touche.
Robert John Davenport says, other than that, there doesn't seem to be much else to say on the subject. Some movies, when they continue a great narrative, make some great sense as a sequel. Other movies are just trying to stay relevant. And still other movies are trying to bank on the nostalgia that those of us who can still remember the 80s and all its glory seem to want to live in.
That's true, man. And I wish they would stop banking on the nostalgia because it doesn't seem to pay off very often. More often than not, it doesn't pay off. Except in Dumb and Dumber, which I'm sure will be the greatest comedy of all time. Remember, guys, you can like us. And thanks for your replies. Remember, you can always hear what this week's topic is if you go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Every Tuesday night usually is when the topic goes up, and you can leave your comments, and then we will read. We will probably tweak them because some people like to write novels, but we'll definitely try to get those in on the show. Remember to like us on Facebook while you're there. We also have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group. That's different than a page. That confuses Scott and Justin as well.
No, doesn't that confuse
me? I'm sorry, it confuses Justin.
Immensely.
It's not just for fans of the show. It's for anybody that likes movies or TV. So join up there and come talk with us. Remember to review us on iTunes, and we'll read your review on the show. We do have a few emails before we close out. Justin?
Shane Hohen says, my wife and I watched Snowpiercer. I cannot remember which of the Ho team recommended it, but what a great analogical film. Ed Harris's character Wilford really put the views of true society and the train into perspective. But fuck that ending. All that build up for, and then he says, non-spoiler, that simple ending. Thank you for the recommendation. Chris Evans' role was well done and very humanistic. I think it was one of our listeners who saw it first and let us know how great it was, and then we all caught agreed. It when it hit iTunes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Craig Schermerhorn says, Monty Python equals Night Funny. You shut your mouth.
Yeah, Craig.
Craig.
Go, Craig.
Shut it.
I love
Can't
you, Craig.
Can't watch John Wick trailer due to sad puppy sound like McConaughey all the way back to Angels in the Outfield.
Wow.
They already tried to kill Kurt Russell. He still has Death Scythe on his mantle and never spilled his drink.
Damn right.
And then Robert John Davenport. Too heavy, just too heavy. Not black, just too white. Oh, I'm sorry. I should be singing this.
No, you shouldn't.
Too wrong or too right to dance tonight. Macumbersome. Yeah, there you go.
You wrote your little song.
He did. I appreciate that.
You could do Brian's as well since he's not here.
I miss 7 Mary 3.
Me too. Steve Peterson says, I love, love, love Nolan, but my expectations are way down for Interstellar. I'm not a huge fan of space movies or McConaughey. Two strikes against you. So I'm not overly excited for this. I haven't seen many trailers, so I'm not even really sure what it's about. But I will see the 10 p.m. showing on Thursday for sure, just based on Nolan's past films. Another strike against Mr. Peterson. I really hate Monty Python 2. I don't think it makes you horrible. I think it makes you smart.
Yeah. Whoop. Another one for the Monty
Python.
What's
smart to not like incredible British humor? And at the end, we come
back
to
Is this a fish
whole...
called Wanda? Because that was incredible.
Hey, that's not a Monty Python movie.
No, but that's
it's
funny British.
People...
That's funny
no,
British.
No, that's not nearly as funny.
It's much
as
more
Life
funny.
Of Brian,
I laugh.
Of Life,
so
or a Holy
don't
Grail
call me stupid.
Holes.
Don't call me stupid. Funnier than anything in Monty Python.
God. Y'all are dumb. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
And at the end, we come back to the whole oversaturation thing. I agree, Scott. They don't need anything else. Seriously, this is Avengers. We don't really need any trailers to get excited about this. They could literally use a piece of notebook paper with Avengers 2, May 1st, 2015, written in crayon by a 5-year-old as a sole poster advertising, and it would still make $1 billion.
It can be arranged, by the way. I work at an elementary school.
That's true.
We can make that happen. Sorry if this isn't brief enough, Brian. If you read it without pausing, it's a lot shorter. And
I wish Brian would have been
here to read
another
long
it.
One. This one from his paramour, Amy Hutchinson. Ha ha ha. So I've had an extremely busy week and I literally fell asleep while typing my picks for this week's topic. So I did make it on the podcast. So here you go. Space exploration movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. Doesn't count, Amy. TV show, Doctor Who. That does count. Fave Explorer, The Doctor, hands down. I like that. I like Monty Python, but I already knew I was in the minority with that. You are not in the minority. Monty Python love is the majority. Everybody else
kind of in the minority.
Are just slack-jawed losers.
Yeah, kind of in the minority.
Last one, she says, I'm iffy on Interstellar as well. The preview didn't do much for me, really. But speaking of upcoming movies, I have a question. Is anyone else excited to see Nightcrawler? We were. We saw were. It. Now you should be, too.
I am now.
Loved it. Scott?
We got one from Catherine Bonsall. She says, still laughing. I'm grading papers, and listening is making this a more fun experience. I hate grading. I want to see John Wick now. Love martial arts.
Go, go, go.
Catherine, I'm with you on the hating grading papers. It sucks.
But not on the John Wick? You go see John Wick.
I do want to see John Wick. I got a whole bunch I got to go see now.
But you got to rush out and see poop jokes. And guys peeing in and handing a water thing to the cop.
I said I'm going to see Nightcrawler. Yeah. Simmer down now.
I don't know. When it's on DVD. It's on Redbox.
Brad Pempek. Grandpa's
cough syrup.
Brad Pempek says, I've got to start listening to the podcast while doing something other than working, because trying to leave voicemails for people to pay their bills is not so convincing when I'm on the verge of busting a gut, and I'm only 10 minutes in.
Sweet.
Glad you're enjoying it, Brad. Thanks for listening.
And we got one in the last minute from Dan Miranda, who he said he wants to let us know, because he got to go to the Interstellar premiere. He said, I won't say much about the movie as to not spoil or influence your watching of the movie, except to say that the acting was phenomenal. Also, if you have any old astrophysics or quantum mechanics books laying around, you might want to brush up before you step into the theater. The science, both the realistic science and the stretched, which I assume is movie science, gets thick and deep pretty fast. I'm really interested to hear what each of you have to say about the movie, which we will talk about next week in detail. As an engineer in the space exploration business, it was fun, exciting, and inspiring to see a Hollywood movie highlight the importance of what we do. Many people don't realize that NASA is in the middle of developing a new deep space exploration vehicle, and our first test flight of the whole system is only 2 years away. As always, you guys rock. Thanks, Dan. That's fantastic. I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Wow. That's very cool. We got NASA people listening. How about that? Does that mean we're smart? I don't feel smarter.
Well, I never studied quantum mechanics in a college, but I did read quite a few books on it to do research for books, and I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Were they books about fucking space travel and shit? Like
Star Wars
some books?
Some of the books were just purely about quantum mechanics.
Was it Star Wars canon? Is that what it was? Star Trek, stuff like that?
No, I've got those books too. The physics of Star Trek, physics of Star Wars. I got those, but... You know, just the whole thing about, you know, quantum entanglement and string theory. Well, string theory is its own thing. It's not quantum mechanics, but I love that stuff. So I'm really hoping the movie is smart, but doesn't overdo it.
I've heard all kinds of things, but I want to wait until I see it to really comment on what those things are. So stay through the credits for Outtakes, guys. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com or tweet us at @H_outsider. Email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And remember, you can listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher radio app, which apparently now has a car mode. So you can listen in your car now. That's cool. And give us a thumbs up if you do listen on Stitcher or just through our RSS feed. That's going to pretty much do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. I want to thank Justin Scott. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I almost said Brian.
Hey, I've got, just because Brian's here, not here, but he would expect it, I have 2 new short stories available on Amazon.
He would not give a shit. He wouldn't read them.
But he would expect me to pimp myself.
Oh, would he now?
I think he'll be disappointed if I didn't let people know that I have 2 new short stories up on Amazon, and I think they're both pretty goddamn good.
If you go to our website, you can go to Justin's page, and you will find a link to his Amazon stuff.
Good.
So you can buy his books. I'm sure they're fantastic. I wrote them. Yes,
duh.
Absolutely. They'll probably be movies by the end of the year.
Your lips to God's ears.
Well, guys, make sure to come back next week. We're going to talk more about Interstellar. We'll probably have, after the show, we'll have like a little spoiler session so we can discuss the ins and outs of the movie, because apparently that's getting some talking points from people.
That's awesome.
We'll find out. All right, guys, remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. I hate your chair. Did you hear that, Justin? You might get pink eye. This podcast.
I heard it.
I hope you're cool with that.
As long as he's not trying to kiss me and give me mono. That shit don't fly.
Uh-uh.
That dog don't hunt.
You know what does fly? Pink eye.
First thing my wife said when I told her I had pink eye, she goes, "You been touching your poop?"
Yes. I'll handle if you'd like Christopher Nolan's little thing.
Does that mean you want to?
Yep.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Yep. No.
I'll do the trailer park if you don't want, Scott.
No, I'll do it. I'm not going to have anything written up, so.
Then I'm better off the cuff.
Okay.
So, if
are you?
Yeah, I am.
Are you?
Ask Scott. Scott, am I better off the cuff?
Better than me.
Well, all right, that's nuts.
You know what? Nope. You're mean. Hug me. Love me. Tell me a compliment. I'm going to stay here. We're going to sit here until you tell me a compliment.
You're a very caring person.
That's not fair. I want something cool about me.
I don't know anything cool.
You give good head.
You suck a mean dick. You're a very caring lover. Down for the D.
Okay, we can stop. You don't have to keep going.
Did I tell you, one time my wife was giving me a hard time because she's like, you never compliment me. You never say anything nice about me. So I was like, you're really good at Galaga. She is.
That's really what you gave her. Huh?
I did.
There's you don't something... talk badly.